Welcome to the Midday with Norman. That would be me and Stephanie.
Good afternoon, and a special guest.
Yes, Paul Berduriscota. Welcome back to our Wisconsin Public Radio airwaves. What a pleasure to see your smiling face again.
Delighted to be back in a city which has so much meaning for me.
And he's not in our normal studio. He is seated at the grand piano in Buck's studio.
Our Mason and Hamlin piano, which you have played a couple of times now, so you know what to expect. And you make a wonderful sound out of it. Before we hear from you on the piano, just catch us up a little bit. What you've been doing the last couple of weeks?
Last couple of weeks, I have been recording Haydn concertos, a rarity, not so little known. He wrote three wonderful piano concertos, conducting from the keyboard with a wonderful orchestra from Vienna. It's called Wiener Konzertverein. They are members of the Vienna Symphony. And also I made Haydn solo recordings on a period piano, which is from my collection. And this is perhaps the best instrument which has come over from Haydn's time, the one make which he preferred. It's called Johann Schantz. Before that, I had a brief visit to China, all that in celebration of my 80th birthday year, which led me to London, Paris, Prague, Tokyo, and so on.
And Madison.
And Madison. Yeah, sure. We don't forget that.
And you're here in Madison. You'll be doing a performance on Sunday evening, I understand.
Yes, it's a very special occasion. It's, I think, initiating the concert hall and the piano there. It's a Mason and Hamlin like here. It's the first Unitarian. And I came extra from Vienna all the way to give this first performance.
I know they're very grateful. It's a newly restored Mason and Hamlin.
Yeah, yes, it's beautiful. I've just rehearsed there. It has fantastic acoustics.
And of course, it's the memory
of Frank Lloyd Wright, the great, great citizen from Madison.
So now if we just say, sort of off the top of your head, what would you like to play?
I play a little bit of one Schubert Impromptu, which is one of my favorites and which has accompanied me through a lifetime. I've played it first about 70 or 72 years ago. Oh. I still love to play it.
Thank you.
was 142, maybe?
Yeah, 142, or Deutsch number 935, number 2 in A-flat major.
About as pretty as an impromptu can be. How has that piece changed for you in the past 70 years that you've been playing it?
I try now to make it speak more than only sing it, you know. It's like a speech, like a poem. And I think that's perhaps the specialty of my style, that my music has perhaps more breathing. Unfortunately, literally, if I'm so close to the microphone, you might have heard my breathing. But to give it life, and life is breath.
You started as a young person. Do you still work with young people? Are you teaching?
Yes, I love to be with young people. They are open, and for them, life and music, everything is fresh and new. And so the first experience is always a very important one, decisive sometimes for a lifetime. And it has given me great pleasure, and I feel privileged that many people, 50, 60, 70 old, came and said, you know, your recordings when I was in my teens or a child gave me courage, inspiration. When I was studying, I listened to them and I got better results, more A's than if I listened to other music.
Oh, you might be able to patent something there.
And some, of course, of them became remarkable pianists of international fame. Some of them have come very far. Maybe they are outdoing me. I hope they will.
Well, I was telling Stephanie today that I've been listening to your recordings for, well, longer than I would care to admit, but I would say close to 40 years.
Oh, then you're one of them. Thank you, Norman. That gives me great pleasure. Of course, I have special memories of Madison, because it was here when I first came as an artist in residence. Believe it or not, it was the first time I came in 1964, and second time in 66, and then I stayed for 5 years and became artist in residence. I gave countless concerts, classes, lectures, and traveled all over the state and enjoyed the wonderful hospitality of the people in Wisconsin.
What are some of your latest musical discoveries?
Well, my latest musical discovery are the two early concertos by Haydn, which have literally remained unknown until the complete Haydn edition came out about 20 years ago. You will hardly find them in the catalog, unlike Mozart. They have countless things. And since next year we shall celebrate 200 years of Haydn's death. Well, we shouldn't celebrate that. We should memorize it. He was one of the greatest, among the great geniuses. And his two early concertos are so full of life and of surprising harmonies. Sometimes you think you are not in the time of Haydn and Mozart, but rather of Schumann. And I had a wonderful orchestra to follow me. So they will be issued in the beginning of next year.
You don't hear about Haydn concertos. I realize there aren't nearly as many as Mozart wrote. And I would gather that Haydn's professional life did not place that kind of demand on him that it would for Mozart. But why do you suppose these concertos are so little known?
Well, first of all, they were underestimated. I would say they are perhaps among the most underestimated works of a great composer. Everybody admires Haydn's symphonies, his string quartets, his solo piano sonatas, his piano trios, to mention but a few, of course, his two great oratorios. But of course, his piano concerto is only the D major concerto, which has been always known. It's there, but also left on the margin. I think, as you said, probably Haydn was so busy doing so many other things and discoveries, and probably he didn't get enough commissions for piano concertos. He was commissioned to string quartets, to trios for the rather forgotten instrument baritone, because the Prince of Esterhazy was
150 of those.
Exactly. And so, I mean, there was simply no time. But the same thing with Schubert. Of course, Schubert could have written the most wonderful piano concerto. He wrote zero piano concertos.
We talked about the early works of Haydn, and you're opening your program with his last piano sonata on Sunday night.
Yes, his 52nd sonata, according to the official counting. There are some 7 or 8 lost sonatas and a few others which have been bypassed. So it happened, I tried to put a program together, and as it happened, I found out that all the 3 sonatas I'm playing are the last sonatas by great composers. First, actually, I wanted to call it the last piano works, but that is not true in the case of Beethoven, unfortunately, because Beethoven, after having written his last piano sonatas, wrote some bagatelles and his Diabelli variations. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, yeah. And it's interesting because, of course, the last work and the last word, there is something very special. It is something of a farewell, and in most cases a happy farewell to life. And that's what I feel in most of these compositions which I shall present on Sunday.
Well, we'll reunite you and our piano here in just a moment. But first, a message or two comes your way from Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to the Midday with our guest, Paul Badura-Skoda, who graces the airwaves of Wisconsin Public Radio from time to time. What would you like to play next?
Well, maybe you can play one of my recordings. You have a live recording of my concert when I was so much young. It was my 75th birthday. And there we have some beautiful Brahms. Let's hear.
We do. We have from the Brahms 6 piano pieces. Why don't we hear one of those? Pianist Paul Badura-Skoda with music of Brahms from the 6 piano pieces.
And a 1920 Bösendorfer Imperial.
Yeah, that is a special instrument from my collection, which has a velvety sound and a singing quality. When I played that concert, one of the Vienna critics called the piano the Stradivarius among the pianos, which doesn't preclude that they like other pianos, also very much like your Mason and Hamlin. And, of course, Steinway and Sons. We should not forget that they are great pianos.
And well, speaking of the Mason and Hamlin, you are here to dedicate a newly restored Mason and Hamlin in a concert on Sunday evening that is going to be taking place at the First Unitarian Society. It's co-sponsored by Farley's House of Pianos. And if you're interested in tickets, they can be purchased at Farley's House of Pianos or at Orange Tree Imports in Madison. And the number is 608-271-2626. And there is also information on the website at farleyspianos.com.
How many pianos do you have?
A question I could never answer completely. I just bought a new Steinway. So altogether, there are about 26 or 27. Of course, you will understand that there's a problem how to house them.
I was going to ask, do you live in a warehouse?
No, but in earlier times, we built a studio around them, but even that studio wasn't big enough. Now they are kept in a castle in Upper Austria, in a museum of instruments, and it's called the Badura-Skoda Collection, and the most valuable instruments, including Beethoven's last forte piano by Konrad Graf, are kept there.
That sounds like wonderful company for your pianos.
Yeah. And I'm delighted because, after all, I'm in old age, as you can hear from my voice. And so the instruments will survive me in excellent condition. Air condition and
humidity control.
And, of course, and all that. And particularly piano technicians, in plural, who take care of the instruments every week.
Well, do you ever waste a lot of time in the morning saying, which piano should I play today, and then you can't make up your mind?
Oh, sure. Even now, because in my Vienna apartment, I still have 5 pianos.
And you say sort of something to the effect of, well, I want something that's kind of lighter sounding today, so I think I'll play this one.
Of course, and of course, one of my favorite pianos now is the original, authentic Anton Walter. I pronounce it the Austrian way, Walter, you would say, which is Mozart's favorite piano maker. Of course, it's not Mozart's own piano, but it's of the same vintage, and it has the most wonderful Mozartian sound. I wish I could make you hear that instrument, but I shall make recordings on that, so they will reach you eventually.
Excellent.
Do you play on forte piano or clavier, various instruments, depending on what you're going to be recording?
Yes, I play on various instruments, and particularly in smaller halls. And for special societies, it gives me pleasure to produce what we call the authentic sound. But there is a little knack to that, because what was authentic to people 200 years ago isn't authentic to us. The authentic sound of our century is, of course, a normal modern piano. So what I'm trying when I play in a larger hall, including tomorrow, to play on the best modern pianos, which gives me the pleasure that I can transmit some of the experience which I had playing for more than 50 years on period instruments, and making a modern piano sound like a Haydn piano, like a Beethoven piano, and at the end of my concert, Schubert and Frank Martin, the great contemporary Swiss composer about whom we have to speak a little more.
I did mean to ask about Frank Martin. You're going to be performing the Fantasy on Flamenco Rhythms. Can you tell us a little bit about that piece?
Well, flamenco rhythms, of course, you have seen flamenco dances. That is sort of step dancing.
Oh, he's got another career here.
Yeah. I've, of course, done it with his daughter, Frank Martin, because the piece was originally dedicated to both of us, his daughter, Teresa, and me, and the original performance took place a few weeks before Martin died. Martin, he's pronounced like Chopin, but she calls herself Teresa Martin in the Spanish way.
No wonder we get confused.
Yes, and we performed it, and it was the most exciting thing. The composer was happy, and to me, of course, it's a fantastic confirmation. I had literally lessons with the composer in which I recorded. This is a valuable document in which he talks about it. His native tongue was French. Typical Geneva French, wonderful, soft and sweet, and where he even plays examples from the fantasy, how he wanted it, and he appreciated my playing. That gave me, of course, enormous courage, because composers, even if they are spread over centuries, they are like a brotherhood.
Now, you said that you just bought a new Steinway. What is the appeal of new pianos for you?
Well, it is the freshness, the youth, the enormous power of the soundboard, and a great wealth of overtones, of harmonics, and of course the mechanical perfection, and something which you cannot define, the sheer beauty of sound. That's actually what led me to collect instruments. Each piano has its own beauty. It's like the voice of singers, you know. You love the voice Elisabeth Schwarzkopf, Irmgard Seyfried, Söderström, and Gwimmen, and many of the, of course, the most recent ones.
But each is individual.
Yeah. Mm.
Does it not take time for a piano to really get its voice, or can you actually play it on day one and say, wow, this is...
No, a good piano needs to be, as the Steinway people say, to be broken in. It's a bit like a horse, and my piano is not yet quite broken in, but the newest one. But the Bösendorfer, which you have heard before, had, of course, it's about my age, so broken
so
in, but not
mellow.
Broken out, not broken. Yes. Should we hear more of that piano? Maybe we play that Villa Lobos piece which I mentioned on the other CD. He's a great Brazilian composer, and he's perhaps best known piece is called Impressiones Seresteiras. Maybe we start a little bit after the beginning because the piece is over 5 minutes long. And
oh,
so
we can take it from the top.
Okay, that's up to you.
Okay. Pianist Paul Badoriscota with music of Hector Villa-Lobos. And that was the Impresarios?
Impresiones Seresteiras, Impressions from the Seresteiras, I can't pronounce Portuguese very well, which I played at also somewhat historical concert when the first conference took place about to improve ecology and to reduce the effect, of bioxygen and God knows what, and carbon dioxide in Rio de Janeiro, 1981. And so, of course, as an homage, dedication to the Brazilians, I played that piece. It's also a live recording.
Oh, it's marvelous.
It is evocative, I must say. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to say, oh, yes, that reminds me of Brazil, since I haven't been there. But it definitely has an atmosphere to it. And he was a composer who, I think, perplexed a lot of people at first, Villa-Lobos. They didn't know quite what to make of him. He was so out of the frame of typical European composers.
Yeah, but what he created, of course, has been lasting. And he wrote not only wonderful things for piano and orchestra, he's perhaps one of the best composers for modern guitar. And there,
yes,
of course, they inspired by the great guitar playing of even amateurs there and of the dances and of the rhythms. He could bring new life to European music, which sometimes had gotten stale.
So show us some of the things that Frank Martin showed you about this piece.
Yes,
of
but
his.
I go to the piano, but first I give you a little bit of the story. Once I had given a recital of different fantasies by great composers, and I missed a contemporary fantasy. So I simply wrote a word to my friend. At that time he had become friend, Frank Martin, who was, of course, much older than I. Could you not write a fantasy for me? And he accepted the commission, but told me, look, I'm so busy, Paul, I cannot promise you to finish it within 2 or 3 years. Now, by that time, he was 79, and I was a bit pessimistic. But, of course, he had the precision of a Swiss watch, and exactly 3 years later, at the end of 1973, I received it. I know the date, of course, because the first performance took place 1 year later in 1974. And at that time, imagine he was 84 years old, and the work is so full of vitality, you would never believe that's an old composer. I think I have to explain two things about him, and now I go to the piano. Here I am. He wanted, of course, to write a fantasy which should be out of the ordinary way. He knew that the greatest composers had written so much for the piano, and he knew that just to add another piece of piano music was not his liking. So he told me he came to the idea of writing it on flamenco rhythms because he had fallen in love with the rhythm of flamenco and the expression of the flamenco dancers and poets and singers, which express defiance and sadness, but also triumph, and always close to death, literally dying. And of course he knew that death was coming. It is certainly in view of his forthcoming death, he wrote this piece, which is not sad at all, but in defiance, I would say, and based on flamenco rhythms, first of all on the rhythm of rumba, which originally actually was South American, but which was adapted by the flamenco dancers, which, of course, live mostly in the south of Spain and Andalusia, Granada, and so on. And another thing he told me during our many meetings, that he was fond of the harmony of the minor chord. Now, just to write minor chords, that would be too old-fashioned. So he added a piece of salt and pepper to each of these chords, and so I play perhaps the very beginning of the fantasy, where you have always minor chords, but always with a little dissonance in it. And in the rhythm of rumba, first land, slowly. And now a melody which he says was inspired by Schubert. The beginning, and then the piece accelerates, becomes more passionate, and I might play you a little part of the true rumba-like allegro section, which is most exciting and, of course, invites to be danced. And in fact, it was danced by his daughter, Teresa Martin, which I have already said earlier. Excuse me for repeating myself. How does it go?
She must have been quite an energetic dancer, but of course, I mean, you're a very energetic pianist too, but it must be quite a sight to see the two of you.
I go back.
Playing those flamenco rhythms of Frank Martin.
That's quite an allegro section.
Yeah, the piece actually finished I wouldn't call it resignation, but in sadness with two slow movements. And it took me a while, actually took me a whole year to come to terms with that. You would expect with that ending that it would be most brilliant, Liszt-like. Mm-hmm. No, he didn't like that. And so there are two slow sections, but full of expression, truly romantic expression. And one has to hear it twice. That is always the problem with a first listening, a first performance. Actually, when we premiered the piece, people were so enthusiastic that we immediately had to repeat it in Lucerne. It was on August 16th in 1974, a date which I shall never forget.
That's a marvelous reception.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I shall finish with Schubert, and the last work on my program is Schubert's great sonata in B flat. And here you have really the feeling it is like in Frank Matar, a farewell to life. But I would call it happy resignation, acceptance of fate, and being already above earthly things. The very opening of this sonata is so deeply moving that I shall never forget how I was moved to tears when I first listened to it, and I said to myself, I have to play it. But to play it with that abandon, that took me many, many years. Maybe I play you the very opening.
It would be a treat.
And it is very close in melody, in character, to one of Schubert's last songs, which he wrote about 2 or 3 weeks before he wrote down the first movement of that sonata, which is called in German Am Meer, at the seaside, I would say, and in which he describes in words by the great composer Heine the feeling of a sunset on a quiet evening, quiet sea, nothing moves. And that feeling, I think, prevails also at the very opening. We have still a few minutes. The end of this movement is so breathtaking and so heart-rendering that in the many performances I gave, nobody ever made a noise. They didn't even cough after I had played the first movement. I play back this ending, which is so unique.
Thank you.
Well, at times it sounds like Schubert, the song composer, and then that beautiful song in the right hand turns into something that's music only for the piano. It's interesting the way this goes from a kind of a Schubert that we're used to something more modern, I guess I'd have say.
It's unique. And I tell you some of my secrets, why my piano has a more singing sound, whichever piano I touch. That's my left hand. I play the left hand about 2 degrees softer than most of the other pianists, and that gives it the right resonance.
It's so lyrical, so beautiful.
Were these sonatas very well known in Schubert's time?
Schubert became recognized about 100 years after his death. And there was this one sonata, yes, it was played occasionally, but very, very little, because after Schubert time came the age of romanticism and of romantics and of the greatest virtuosity the piano has ever seen. Composers try to outdo each other in writing the most difficult, brilliant passages, and Schubert was not one of them, although in his Wonder of Fantasy he wrote also passages which inspired Liszt later. And also there was, of course, the great misunderstanding of Schubert as a piano composer for piano sonatas. People measured them unjustly against Beethoven. They said Schubert's piano sonatas have no form, no shape, no ideas, literally. No melodies even. Can you imagine that?
That's hard to imagine.
And they said, and they are shapeless, which is absolutely wrong. And the only reason why they didn't appreciate it is, first of all, they didn't know them. Second of all, nobody could play them, even if I had known them. And third of all, because that was exactly this, their virtue. They are not like Beethoven. Beethoven was his great contemporary. He died only 1 year prior to Schubert. And yet, Schubert accepted that enormous challenge to write piano sonatas in the same age of Beethoven. And of course, the only way to do it was not to be a second-rate Beethoven, but to be a first-rate Schubert. And that became recognized only in the 20th century. And the pioneer was Arthur Schnabel. One cannot give him enough praise. He was the first one who dared to play his sonatas in public and to make recordings of them. And that took more than 100 years.
Did Schubert play his sonatas in public? Was he the way that Beethoven and then a little bit later that Chopin did, or were these pieces that he tried to sell and they pretty much sat there mostly?
In public, he performed for his friends. He did not give concerts, and it's also typical of how underestimated he was. In his whole lifetime, there was only one public concert in which he did not participate. Friends played his works. Singers sang his music. A trio was performed, this great E-flat trio by friends. But one most moving thing is he did perform for friends in a small circle in his house concerts. And the old Hummel, Johann Nepomuk Hummel, also great composer, came to Vienna. He actually wanted to meet Beethoven, but Beethoven had died. He was introduced to the Schubert circle, and people said when Schubert accompanied his leader and his wonderful piano playing, the tears were running down from old Hummel's face. He said he had never heard such a thing before.
Well, it's our pleasure to hear from you again. Paul Badura Skoda, our guest for another performance here, and you will be playing, is it twice during your sojourn here in Madison? Are there I know there's a Sunday night. Is there another one?
I don't believe so.
No, it's just unique opportunity. Okay. Sunday night, Sunday afternoon.
Sunday evening at 7:30. That's at the First Unitarian Society in their new atrium auditorium at University Bay Drive in Madison. And the number for information is 608-271-2626 or online at farleyspianos.com.
And those are last pieces.
That's right, the last piano sonatas by the great composers Haydn, Beethoven, and Schubert. We thank you very much, Mr. Badura Skoda, for coming in and performing and for bringing in your music and for sharing your spirit and knowledge and wonderful mastery of the piano with us this afternoon.